Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey guys, I got something really cool going on. This is a fantastic opportunity for actually you and I to meet and for you to hear some incredibly cool music. On Tuesday, October 1st, the Nashville guitar community is putting on a tremendous show of some of the top players. Pat Bergeson is going to be there. I had him on the show. He was mentored by Chet. Andy Wood, who's like lightning dangerous, also another guy that was on the show, plays mandolin, guitar, acoustic. He's a wizard. Darren Favorite, who's also on this show, second or third generation Nashville player. Matthew Lee, he actually runs a Nashville guitar community, along with Paul Johnson and John Stazella. And he is such a tremendous player. Meg Williams, up-and-coming blues star. And Terrence Downing, solid player, rocking in Nashville as well. So it's only $15 to get into this event. Again, it's Tuesday night, October 1st. The doors open at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7. It's going to be at the Analog Room at the Hutton Hotel in Nashville. And I think that's on West End Avenue. Tons of gear giveaways from Wampler, Eminence Speakers, GuitarEFX.com, BTPA Cables, Lucky Dog Guitars, Groon Guitar Store, Morgan Amps, and Vaughn Scow. Pre-sale tickets. Go to the Nashville Community Group on Facebook, and they'll have something for you there. And they also have videos of previous performers at this show on their YouTube channel. The other really cool thing is these guys have been kind enough to invite me to be the guest MC of the event, and I will certainly love to meet you if you listen to the show. Please come up, say hello. It's going to be a great night. Tons of cool guests, really good musicians. So come on down. Show starts at 7 at the Analog Room at the Nashville Hutton Hotel. All right, I will see you Tuesday night, October 1st. Be there. Aloha. If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area, in Hillsborough, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, The 7 Biggest Mistakes Homeowners Make When Hiring a Realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on The 21 Most Expensive Mistakes Tampa Home Buyers Make When Buying a Home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. Today, we're going to shed some big light on the rhythm section. It is very rare that I get to have a musician on that has actually played on one of my all-time favorite records, as we have today with Vinny Appice, and who played on Mob Rules and tons of other great records. So I'm really happy to have Vinny on. Quick announcement. Don't forget, you could watch this on YouTube or listen to it on iTunes. I'll give you a real quick background on Vinny. Started playing drums, and he's from New York, so I get the best of everything today. Started playing drums at age 9. Only people from New York feel that way. You know that, right? Right. He started playing drums at age 9. His first big gig was with Rick Derringer. He did 3 albums with him. Did you play with
John Lennon?
No. With that Rick, was Neil Giraldo?
No.
Okay.
I played before Neil and Myron joined the band.
Okay.
I left and the guitar player Danny Johnson left because we had a band called Axis.
Axis. Before. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. That's a great record, man.
Yeah. It produced by Andy Johns. Yeah.
Killer record. After that, as he said, he formed Axis with Danny Johnson and Jay Davis, who were also playing with Rick Derringer at the time. And they recorded this great record. If you've never heard it and you love 70s music, it's timeless. It's called It's a Circus World. Great. Just incredible record, man. Vinny was fantastic, man. Vinny then got asked to join Black Sabbath to support the Heaven and Hell tour when Bill Ward had to leave. He subsequently appeared on Black Sabbath albums Mob Rules, which is honestly, dude, that just everything on that is amazing, and Live Evil. In 82, he then left Sabbath with Ronnie James Dio, and they formed the band Dio. Vinny recorded the first four studio albums and one live album with Ronnie James Dio, and then he left to work with Dokken bassist Jeff Pilson, who was on this show a while back, in the band Flesh and Blood. In 92, he returned to Black Sabbath for the Dehumanizer album and tour, and he then rejoined Dio, and they recorded Strange Highways and Angry Machines. Other projects Vinny's been involved with is Circle of Tyrants. He's also worked with Alex Skolnick, who is on this show. He worked with Sin City Sinners in Las Vegas, which is like an all-star band that plays a lot in Vegas. He then rejoined Black Sabbath. They couldn't get enough of you, man. Was that it? You were like cocaine for them. And yeah. And
history repeats itself.
What's that?
History repeated itself with Black Sabbath three times.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, the first time 1980, the second time was Dehumanizer tour 92, and then the third time was when they were doing the Dio years.
Right.
Each time it didn't work out with previous drummers, and they said, "Let's call Vinny,"
and it worked.
Yeah. Because for $59.99, I come down, I fix the hotel.
that tour was with Ronnie James Dio again, Vinny, Geezer Butler, and Tony Iommi in 2006. That was a Heaven and Hell tour. And then they released one album, The Devil You Know, before Ronnie James Dio's death. After Ronnie passed, the original lineup of Dio, of Vinny Appice on drums, Jimmy Bain on bass, Vivian Campbell on guitar, and Claude Schnell on keyboards, reunited with vocalist Andrew Freeman, and they performed covers of Dio songs they originally recorded. Is that most of the band last in line?
Yeah. And then we started out as a fun thing. Just, you know, we started out in the rehearsal studio. Viv called up and said, "Hey, you want to jam?" One day I spoke to Jimmy. I said, "Yeah." So we got together and it was so much fun. We didn't have a vocalist, and then we decided to do it again the next week, and Andy was in town. I knew Andy from a long time ago, and Andy came down, blew everybody away singing those songs.
That's so we cool. Went, wow.
And why don't we do some gigs, you know? So that's how this whole thing started, and then we got an offer for a record deal, Frontier Records, and we did our first record. We wrote together. And it went so well that now we just released album two in February.
That's awesome.
And we're going out with some shows. We've been playing, but now we're going out again after the summer.
Frontier, is that the label in Germany?
It's Italian.
Oh, it's Italian. Okay. There's right. Okay. There's one in Italy.
SPV's German. The German label.
Yeah. That's the metal more label, right? Yeah, okay.
Carmine and I released the record in 2016 on SPV.
On SPV, that's cool.
Called APPICE because nobody could pronounce it right.
Well, you guys can't even pronounce it right, apparently.
No, actually, I can. Carmine.
You can. Your brother can. Other things Vinny's worked on, he's played with Kill Devil Hill, and I want to give a shout out to Mark Zavon for hooking us up. Their debut album landed at number 9 on the Billboard Top New Artist album charts, and number 41 on the Hard Music chart, number 50 on the Independent album chart. So if you haven't checked that out, Kill Devil Hill. He also did two albums, Last in Line with Jeff Pilson was involved there, and Joel Hoekstra, who was on this show a long time ago, 13 and others. He's currently participating in Drum Wars show with his brother Carmine, And in 2017, Vinny was inducted into the Hall of Heavy Metal History. And he's currently going out with Last in Line again. As he said, they have a new record out. We'll talk about that after. Man, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, I got tired listening to all that.
Yeah, it's cool to hear, like, you know, all the stuff you did. It probably seems like you probably weren't thinking of that much.
Yeah, you can't stop. You know, when you stop, when you snooze, you lose. And it's kind of like a fire inside. You keep going, keep going. Love playing. So,
well, you also, you look like you're in pretty good shape, like you take care of yourself, which probably helps.
Oh, yeah. I never really did drugs and I never really drank. In the early years, Holy Diver and stuff, used to love smoking pot. Mm. I did that for a while. And then I started studying computers actually in the years 2000. So I couldn't remember much after reading the stuff. So I went, man, I got to stop smoking, you know, because my memory is just like really crap. So I stopped smoking and then I got into computers and then my memory was a lot better.
That's
so, yeah, so I kept everything going.
What were you studying? What about computers were you studying? Like coding, programming?
What I did was my friend introduced me to a computer and I'm like, wow, this is cool. You know, 1995, Windows 95, not a Mac. And,
you're the only musician I've literally out of 570 interviews at this point that I talked to who's not on Mac. Literally.
I hate Mac. Sorry. But you know why? Because it's supposed to be all this creativity and all this like la-di-da stuff, jobs. And yet you can't do things that you really can do on PC. You can't build them. You can't upgrade them
right.
as much. They let you do what they want you to do.
Yeah.
They only allow so much what you can do with those products. So I didn't get into that. I like, you know, it was like when I got a house, I learned how to fix the house, plumbing, electric, drywall, all that stuff. Cars, same thing. When we were doing Holy Diver in Sound City Studios, Ronnie had this old car. And when I was done, I'd go out at night with a light out there and fix the car.
Really? So you're a tinkerer.
Yeah, I'm like crazy with mechanics and stuff. So I got into computers and I totally got into this. But I had a lot of time. It came off tour. I'd sit there and break things on the computer and go, uh-oh, I got no sound. What do I do? I start learning how to fix this stuff. So then I did that. Then I went to school. I went to became Microsoft MCSE's engineer.
That's pretty intense, man.
The top one. And then I did Cisco routers, which is more coding and stuff. And I did that whole course too. So I learned a whole bunch of stuff. I was hanging around a lot of geeks. So I learned a lot of stuff from those guys too.
That's really
I love it. I still build them right here. I got a brand new computer I built. That's so fast for my studio.
That's cool,
and
man.
Now I just used it last week and for the first time. And when I save a mix, the bar goes so quick now.
That's cool.
And it's quiet. The other one was a little noisy.
Man, that's awesome. You're the first guy I've spoken to that's that intense with this, that MCSE certified. That's not an easy certification.
And then I started doing this. Everybody was calling me. This was really funny. They're going, actually, in the MCS school, I was the only one that really knew how to build computers and put it together. And the teacher asked me, can you put a class together and teach how to build a computer one day? I went, yeah. So I taught the class, you know. And so I'm Windows all the way. I could fix almost anything on Windows. And I take care of, so I started taking care of my friends. He had 9 carpeting stores and we're all networked together. I took care of all the stores and people started calling. I had a little business going.
That's pretty cool.
Now I moved out of LA a little bit and now I just take care of a select few companies where I'm then my sister's accounting company and then my sister-in-law's mortgage company. And then one other company. And yeah, now it's easy. You log in, you go remote in, you got to fix everything.
That's pretty cool, man. That's a great, like, not for nothing, but a backup plan if you ever, like, stop playing or something, or you want to just pick up extra stuff and play less.
Yeah, yeah. But I love doing it. It's like I love Windows problems. Like, to believe it, like, people are nuts. They think I'm nuts. Like, why? You like problems? You know, and then I find out what the problem is, and that's the way you learn. You know, everything worked perfectly. You didn't learn anything.
Right, right. That's awesome, man.
You're going to fix it. So I'm crazy with this stuff.
I bet people will be very surprised to hear that about you.
Yeah.
Especially, let me ask the next question. You're 16. I read that you wound up backing up John Lennon at the record plant. Is that accurate?
Yeah, because our band, the band I was in, was a 9-piece band, 4 horn players. And our good friend was Jimmy Iovine.
Okay.
From Dope Records, and he produced John. And he was our good friend. And he brought us into the record plant and recorded some demos. The owner loved it, signed us to a management deal. So he gave us a rehearsal spot on the 10th floor in Manhattan, you know, for free. So we had our gear set up. It was like boys club, you know, and we'd go up and rehearse, I don't know, 4 times a week, 3 times a week. Nice big room. So we're up there one night. Jimmy called on the phone and said, can you guys come down and do some hand claps? We're doing the session. I said, sure. We go downstairs, go in the studio, put the headphones on. There's John Lennon. Holy shit. I was 16. And we did. Now he starts talking to you. You know,
John's talking to you.
Talking, you heard that voice on so many interviews and stuff. You go, oh my God. So we did hand claps on Whatever Gets You Through the Night.
That's amazing, man.
And then we left, said hello and everything. And then he just probably asked, who were those guys that came down in 5 minutes? 9 guys. And so then he used to come up to our rehearsal room while we rehearsed. And, that was amazing. He'd hang out. And then he wound up asking us to do 3 videos that are on some of his DVDs. And then we did, he produced the owner's wife. She's a singer. Hmm. 9 songs with him producing, which was fantastic. You know, you're playing and we stop. He tells you, maybe you should do this. And it's fucking amazing, you know? And then we wound up doing a live show with him. That's called, Salute to Sir Lou Grade. The name of the band was BOMF. If you look on the internet and you search John Lennon and BOMF, it was Band of Mother Effers, you know.
You could curse on here, man.
We didn't have a good name, but so hey. You can see the video. We did that, and then I found out that was his last live appearance.
Was Yoko there with him making
No, this is when he was split up with Yoko. He was with May Pang.
Wow. That's amazing, man.
Yeah, and I used to go to high school the next day.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, where'd you go to high school?
I'd be on the desk drumming. Teacher's teaching, I'm playing on the desk. And then she goes, wait a minute, who's that drumming? And she goes, Vincent, stop that drumming. And I stood up, I went, excuse me, did anyone else in here play with one of the Beatles last night?
You said that.
And then I left. I quit school.
You serious? That is wild.
Yeah.
Where were you going to high school?
High school was in Brooklyn, FDR High School.
And so I
thought high school meant you go and get high, so I was outside smoking pot.
Yeah, I think everybody did though. Back in those days, man.
That whole time outside.
And you just literally walked out and said, I'm done with school.
Yeah, I told my parents, look, you know, this is stupid. Carmine's already successful. You know, with the Vanilla Fudge and Cactus, he's doing great and getting famous. I said, you know, I went to the same drum teacher as him, and I was good. You know, I was a good drummer at 16. And I told them. So they were cool with it because they saw the success of Carmine led the path, you know.
Yeah.
And here I am playing with John Lennon. Carmine didn't even play with one of the Beatles, you know, at that point. So they let me leave. And then later on, years later, I did the GED thing. It got GED. So
that's wild. You know, when you're young and you're doing that, you don't probably think anything of it, but later looking back now, that's ballsy to do.
Yeah. But when you do it, you got all those youthful years to dedicate to making a career.
Right.
You know, you didn't go get a job down the street. Excuse me. And then try to make music happen while I had a part-time job and all that shit. I never really worked a job.
Right.
So I was able to, at 16, man, just keep going, you know, the band. Then Rick Derringer heard me play on those tapes that Jimmy recorded. It was a good band. It was the full horns and shit, real tight. And he said, "Who's that? And who's the drummer?" And it's Carmine's brother, Vinny. So that was a great thing, to a great place to network with so many people in that studio.
At the record plant.
Andrew Smith and Jay Giles' band at the time. And all. So then I saw Rick down there and he said, "Give me a number, man. I'm putting a band together." So I gave him my number. 6 months later, he called and then put Derringer together with him. So that started my thing going. Yeah. That's why I tell young people, I said, you got to network. You know, you got to meet, go out, you meet people, and then you find out what they do, and they might be able to use you, or you can use them. So it's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Master of networking, by the way.
Is he? Well, I think in the music business in particular, it's really valuable. Everything in the short while I've been involved with all you guys, it's all relationships, you know, and if you do well, yeah, people are really supportive to recommend somebody yeah else to you, you know, and I think a lot of people that are sitting in front of their computers are just missing out, like, you know, shredding on a video that's great, but it's not going to lead to as many opportunities as exactly what you're saying, networking and, you know, shaking hands, yeah, and, you know, talking to people.
You have to network, unless you get in some giant band and then you're cool, you know. But even then, you'll meet people, and yeah, Carmine can meet people on a plane sitting next to him, and then all of a sudden he's doing something. He's got to be
really
amazing.
So, man, I'm going to ask you this question. I hope this is the only question I'm going to ask you that you've probably already answered a bunch. What happened with Axis, man? That was such a good record. That band was, I mean, everything was great. The drumming, the guitar, the vocals, and the music, the right, I mean, timeless. Yeah.
Well, that was a band that, I don't know what year that was, 74, 75. It came to California. Carmine was out here in California, and he hooked me up with a band he was trying to produce with Jimmy Haslip on bass and Phil Brown on guitar. Phil went on to write a lot of stuff for TV. And then I met a girl that said, "Hey, there's this band in Texas, in Louisiana, called Axis. Man, you'd be great. Three-piece power band." So somehow we got hooked up, and I went down to play with them. And it was really cool. So I stayed there in Louisiana, and I was young, too. It was like 16, going on 17. And Danny Johnson and Jay Davis, Jay was on bass, Danny's on guitar, wrote these songs together. And I fit in very, really well. And we did really a tour, very, very small little tour. We did a bunch of gigs. Then when Rick Derringer called me, I told Rick, "Why don't you come down to Louisiana? I got a three-piece band. It could be the band." You know? So he did. He came down and he saw us play and he really liked Danny. So he recruited Danny into the band. So it was me and Danny and Rick, and then we got Kenny Aronson. Jay Davis went on to play with Foreigner when they were putting the first album together. But I think they were paying him $50 a week, and he couldn't live on that. So,
oh, my God. Are you serious?
And then about a month later, no, month or two, Rick was ready. We moved to New York. I moved back to New York. Danny came to New York with his family, and we started Derringer. And then, so we did Derringer for a couple of years. And then we were young and anxious. So me and Danny said, let's put Axis back together now that we got a little bit of, so, you know, we're known a little bit here.
Yeah.
So that's how we put that. We got a record deal and we moved it back to California because it was cheaper to do stuff. And then we started doing gigs. And this was all around the time of Van Halen was still, their album wasn't out. And all the bands from LA. And then somehow we got Andy Johns to produce it.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. And then we did a tour after that, but we didn't have good management and they didn't do it correctly, you know, and things weren't happening. You know, we were playing locally in LA, the Whiskey and stuff. And one tour we did around America, but it needed more time, more better management and stuff. You know?
Yeah, you guys should have been opening up for bands like Van Halen or bands of that ilk, you know, on the first go round anyway. And then you would have expected, you know, second album.
I must say that when we played the Whiskey and we played on here with Rick, Rick's guitar solo was You Really Got Me really fast. He played, then go, just like Van Halen. I don't know where they got it from. Well, we might have done it first.
Oh, wow.
Because we didn't do it slow. It was fast, just like they did it. And then we, Rick, we do a couple of things, and then we, down, Rick continues with a solo. So we were all around the same playground.
So it's just bad management, lack of somebody pushing for
good direction, and bad management.
Too bad, man.
We were distributed by RCA Records, which did promote it a little bit, but you know, you need a guy that knows what he's doing and management seat to keep the band together.
That's too bad. So
it was real slow, and then right after that, I started getting the calls from Black Sabbath. You know,
how did Sabbath like hear of you? How did they? What was the connection there?
Okay, well, what's funny, before Sabbath is I got a call from Sharon Osbourne. And she called and said, you know, we're putting a band together with Ozzy, and we heard about you, and we want to fly you to England to hang out with Ozzy. I went, wow. I never been to England. You know, I've been as far as Canada. That was it. You know, I didn't know there was the rest of the world out there. So I talked to my brother. I said, because I was like, 18.
That's amazing what all these situations you're in at such a young age, man.
Yeah, everything was young. So I asked Carmine, what do you think about playing with Ozzy? You know, I heard he's kind of crazy and stuff. So Carmine said, oh, yeah. So I thought, I don't know, you know, I'm going to go all the way to England. So I turned it down.
Oh, wow.
Right. And then a couple of months later, I get a call, and it's the tour manager for Black Sabbath. I think they got my number from Warner Brothers Records somehow. Somebody that worked there knew Carmine. I don't know how or what, but by then I had the Axis album out and three Derringer albums out. So, you know, I had some records out, they might have heard. And they said, Sabbath's in town. Bill Ward left the tour. They had to cancel the Denver show. We got 4 days off. We're looking for a drummer. And they heard about you, and you want to come down to meet Tony tomorrow? I said, yeah. So I went to the hotel. I met Tony. He walks in with the Axis album.
Ah, how cool is that? That you had to feel like $1 million.
And it had a good drum sound on it, some good playing on it.
Great.
So, we met, and we hit it off right away. And he likes to fool. He's a jokester like I am. And we hit it off, and then he says, all right, come down to rehearsal tomorrow. So I went down to SIR Studios in Sunset in Hollywood, and that's where I met Ronnie and Geezer and Jeff Nichols, the keyboard player. So it's funny because 2 weeks before, in the car, I heard Neon Knights on the radio. And I wasn't familiar with Ronnie so much, you know. I heard Man on Silver Mountain and all that stuff, but I didn't follow Rainbow. And I heard Neon Knights. I went, wow, that new singer is kicking ass with Sabbath. Great. So I heard the song. So when I went down, they said, what do you want to play? And I wasn't even a big Sabbath fan. You know, I loved the stuff. And I was more of a Zeppelin fan, you know. So I said, no, I don't know. I heard Neon Knights, so I know the tempo. And I didn't know the rest of the parts. So we played that. It was the first song I ever played with Ronnie. And it was the last song I ever played with Ronnie 35 years later.
Wow.
How many? 30-something years later.
That's creepy. That's wild. Yeah, that's very strange.
Sometimes we opened with it. Sometimes we ended with it in the set. And we just happened to end with it in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And yeah, that was the first song. So then they said, okay, you're in until Bill comes back. And then I had to learn all the stuff, the old stuff. You know, the old stuff has a lot of changes in it, time signatures, tempos are different. It's freaking crazy stuff. I spent the next every minute listening to that stuff. And then we went and played a 30,000 seat arena in Hawaii, Aloha Stadium. So I had a book cheat sheet, you know, because I could read music and stuff. So I wrote cheat sheet, and then it started raining, and the cheat sheet, it was outside, and the book got all wet halfway through the set, and I couldn't even use it. So at the end of the set, I signed it and threw it out in the audience. So some lucky person's got that book.
That's funny.
So I continued that tour. That's a Heaven and Hell tour until Bill came back. But Bill never came back, and then Warner Brothers offered a spot in the movie Heavy Metal. They wanted Black Sabbath to write a song and record for the movie. So freaky, we wind up going to John Lennon's house in England.
That is wild.
We're touring the UK. John just passed, you know, not long ago. And this big mansion, you know, where he did the Imagine video and stuff, and where they walked through the garden, and he had, you know, 10, 15 foot high bushes cut as dinosaurs, trimmed garden. It was amazing. So we go in and go, wow, this is cool. And I get John's room of all the people.
Wow, that's weird.
And I'm like, why me? That's weird, man. But I didn't stay in it. I was kind of freaked out. Watched too many Frankenstein movies when I was a kid. So
no, I can see that, man. It is kind of freaky.
I got to the door. It said John and Yoko on a gold plaque. I went, oh, man. So I went back. I said, yeah, I feel funny staying in here. Can you give me another room? So, and that's where we wrote and recorded The Mob Rules. So that is heavy metal. So it's different than the one that's on the album. Recorded in two different places.
How ironic is it?
Kind of cemented me into the band because it came out so good. Everybody loved it. And, you know, there's new energy in the band. So it was like, oh, okay. That kind of got me in there, locked in more, you know.
That is just an amazing album. When you made it, did you guys have a sense of, or did you have a sense of, hey, man, this is something that's pretty special?
Yeah, I knew when we did the first Mob Rules, I said, man, this song just kicks ass. You know, I knew that was pretty special. And then when we went after the tour later on to start writing, we wrote in a rehearsal place in L.A., in the Valley. And you know, it started coming out like monstrous. You're going, this is good shit here, you know. It sounds like Sabbath. I fit right in. Learned how to play with Tony and Geezer. Yeah, I just didn't come in and play. You get the vibe with where they're at, you know, how they play, all behind the beat, you know. And Tony's so steady, and Geezer's, you know, more of a busy bass player. Just figure out where to fit in, you know. So it worked well. So we sounded like a real, you know, sounded like a band, not, you know, fucking session drummer coming in playing this stuff without. I don't play on the song. I play in the songs, everything. I play melodic, you know. I don't play on the song. I'm in there. You know, fills are in there for a reason. They're not just fills. They're odd things. I play fills in odd places.
You do, man. Even on Axis, you did, because it was such a good. It's noticeable. Ryan,
you know, I play over the vocal line. He's singing. There's a fucking fill behind him, and he never once said, "Don't play over the vocal line." I've had somebody else say that to me, an unknown person, and I said, "Why not?" Well, he was like insulted.
Oh, it was like an ego thing?
It was a project we're trying to do. And I said, forget about it, dude. You're not listening to the, you're not looking at the big picture here. So I play odd, you know, and now I got a studio in my house, which I love. I got a killer drum sound, and I do some sessions here for friends and people like Joel Holstra.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I sit here and I'm running the machines with a wireless keyboard. I'm running Cubase, and man, I can get so granular into these songs. I mean, sometimes there's just you can go bop, 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 boom into the next part, and I'll sit there for an hour because it doesn't seem right. You know, that's not the right fill. That's that short, but something's got to work, and I'll try different things. But it's so cool that I can get into it like that.
That is not great.
Play the song through, you know, and I can don't have to communicate with some engineer. I know exactly what I want to do, so I just run it back. Let me try it again. Then I listen. That's pretty cool. Or I'll just play anything crazy and see what happens, you know. So I love doing it. So that's how we did the Mob Rules, you know.
You obviously have a really good work ethic. Where, and I'm assuming you had that your whole life. Where did that come from?
What's that?
Your work ethic is really good. I mean, to you know, it's to you, it's like that's what you do. You pay attention to detail. But as you know, not everybody's like that. And that's what separates you from other guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I always went into it with my eyes open. I thought you can learn from everybody. So, you know, I watched my brother, you know, as a little kid, I used to go see him play with the Fudge in big places. I'm like, wow. Then he would, you know, teach me a little bit, but he was on the road a lot. But I listened, you know, I listened and I just became very melodic with playing. You know, and now at this point in my career, man, I can hear somebody, it could be louder than hell, which is usually the way it is for me when I play with a band, but I could hear somebody that's out of tune, slightly out of tune, they play the wrong note. I don't play any other instruments, but I hear all the notes, I hear all the tuning, and I hear a lot of ideas when we sit down and when we're in a writing thing, like with Last in Line, come up with some crazy ideas. And but not on the guitar. I'll go, why don't we do like go here or modulate or change the key or this kind of rhythm. And Viv and I work great together with that, you know. So now I hear all this stuff. That's really cool. So yeah. I hear and people think I don't hear. I'm playing loud, and I could hear the wrong slip of the notes. Not with Viv or in that band. These other things I do, you know, this we'll talk about this other project, Sabbath stuff. Somebody plays the wrong note, man, I could hear that shit a mile away. I really fine-tuned in it. And my hearing's not good, but I hear music.
That's interesting. Yeah. When you told the guys after you got – we're working with Sabbath on when you guys did Mob Rules. I'm sure you told him, hey, you know, Ozzy called me. That was so ironic that you turned that down. I mean, how nutty is that in a sense? Not nutty, you turned it down. I mean, how nutty as far as like Ozzy and then the other three got
a good year.
Yeah. I mean, it's great, but I mean, how weird is
and then you get a call from Sabbath. But you know what? I knew Randy Rhoads. So who knows? I might have been in that band and gotten a plane with them.
Holy shit. Yeah.
And wow. The day that plane went down, we were stuck at an airport somewhere on the Heaven and Hell tour. It was fogged in. And we were doing an arena gig, and it looks like we're not going to get there. So they chartered a friggin' eight-passenger propeller job in bad weather. We had to get in that for 2 hours, one of those. And we landed, kissed the floor. Thank God we got out of that. Yeah. And then we found Randy died in a plane crash. That's the only time we did a plane like that. So it's really weird.
Yeah, that is weird, man. Someone's looking out for you, man.
Yeah.
If you could even answer this, because you've had so many knee-jerk reaction, top three musical experiences you've had, could be in the studio, could be live, whatever first comes to mind.
Well, playing with John Lennon doesn't get much top than that, you know, but see back then when I was a young guy, I was playing when I was 16. The reason why he hung out with us is because we never went up and said, John, can I have your autograph, man? Can I take a picture with you? Can I do this? I wish I had his autograph. I wish I had a picture. I never did. So he felt safe hanging out with us.
Yeah.
We were like musician to musician. And that's the way I looked at it. I said, well, he wants us to do this. Okay. I'm just a pro, you know, musician work ethic. So never like, oh my God, you know, playing with him. So that's one. And then playing with Sabbath and Ronnie. And then, you know, playing Ronnie, you know, is just that band. It's just amazing. You know, Tony Keys, a legendary band. And then I got to play with at one point later on in the year around 2000 with Ozzy and Sabbath because Bill couldn't do it. So I went in, you know, and I went in and I remember being up on stage playing like War Pigs going, seeing Ozzy in front of me. This is pretty cool.
That's awesome, man.
Playing, look at this. He's in front of me. This is cool. I'm in the original band.
Yeah.
The history of, you know, it was amazing. So that was cool.
That's awesome, man. You grew up in Brooklyn. What was your childhood like growing up?
My childhood was good. My parents were great parents. They supported everything we did. My father worked every day, came home, he ate his dinner. Yeah, it was very regimented. And it's a great family, big Italian family. And I'd have the basement downstairs with drums and used to hang out with my friend Angelo, who played bass in the band with John Lennon, who wound up following me along and becoming the sound man for Sabbath. And the sound man became the engineer for Holy Diver.
Wow.
He went with us in the five albums that followed. I don't know how many, five, four or five. Yeah. So we used to go down there. We had a tape recorder, smoke a lot of pot, and used to do crazy shit. Let's cut a hole in the wall and put the tape recorder in the wall so it looks cool. Build speakers in the wall. We used to build speakers. And when we play, and, you know, good thing, if I had a computer like this, Pro Tools and Cubase back then, it would have been scientist.
Yeah.
And then Axis, we had a Revox 4-track, and we did demos in that basement in Brooklyn, my mother's and father's basement. And we had to record the drums. We had, I don't know how many mics we had, maybe three mics. And then did one track on the last track was guitar. Then we bounced the drums. No, we must have did the drums and then bounced those tracks down to one. And then put bass on guitar and bounce that down like the Beatles did Sgt. Pepper until you can get everything on there. And that got us a record deal.
And you did all this yourself.
Yeah, we did that ourselves. So growing up was this, I was always playing. Yeah. I didn't really have girlfriends, you know, here and there. I smoked a lot of pot, listened to a lot of music, and started gigging at 15, playing, you know, some weddings and stuff like that, and made money that way. Never got a job. Didn't have to because I was making money on the weekends and stuff. So it was a very creative childhood, you know?
Yeah.
And I was good in school for a while until I met my friend Angelo, who was the bass player. And then we really got into, you know, music and, you know, not school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you're a very bright guy. This wasn't an intellectual issue. You just had a passion that you really compelled you.
I could go to school now and go, wow, that's cool. Algebra, what the heck is this stuff? And why did you do this? And now I'm over. That's why I built computers and stuff. But did that, and then I went to drum lessons every week on Saturday to the same guy that called my money. See, my mother, I was like 10 when I started. She would take me on two buses. Get one bus, I get off wherever it was and get a transfer, take the second bus, get off, walk four blocks, and she'd wait and I'd go in to do my hour lesson, $5 a lesson.
Wow. And
do that back. So that's how they supported us, you know.
That's really cool.
Really cool stuff. I had great childhood, you know.
That's really nice.
So that was my childhood, you know, just music, lots of music and crazy stuff.
You started playing at such a young age. Were there any surprises like about the business itself or anything that, it sounds like you had a lot of this under control from Carmine, like a
yeah, Carmine was good for advice and stuff, and I know he took care of his business, so that influenced me to be involved in that rather than just be a musician and getting ripped off so much.
Yeah,
we were ripped off a little bit here and there, you know. One manager would I go up and go, "How you doing, Al?" And he go, "I go, what's happening, Al?" He goes, "You're happening." So if somebody says that, you better watch out.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, I think
something happening. Where's the money, dude?
Yeah, yeah, right.
I learned early to keep an eye on whatever you can. So
that's really important, because I got to be honest with you, that's the biggest, I think we use the word deficiency, but that's the biggest problem that like 99% of everybody I've spoken to is like, "Oh, I wish I would have taken better care of business," or "I wish I was more familiar with business." And,
you know, like we did Holy Diver at Sound City Studios. And I remember one night had a meeting with Ronnie and Wendy, and I got, you know, got songwriting on that album on a bunch of songs. So I didn't know anything about it. What do you do? What is, you know, how do you get paid for this? And so Wendy said, "Do you want, me to collect the money for you? And then I write you a check and this and that, or do you want to deal with it yourself?" And I was like, "Well, that would be easy. She just sends me a check." And then I thought, you know what? Maybe I should do it myself and learn. So that's what I did. So I still get checks direct to me from Rainbow in the Dark and everything that comes in from the publishing comes to me direct. Yeah. So that's really important, because if somebody's doing it for you, it could be a manager or something going, you know, "I'll collect it and distribute it to the band." And then all of a sudden, you know, 2 years later, you're not with the management anymore and you don't get along. You're going to call and go, "Hey dude, where's the check?" You know? So you want everything to come to you directly into your bank account. And, that's a very, that networking, rock and roll 101 right there.
I like that.
Because, yeah. You know, you don't get along with somebody, all of a sudden the check stopped. Now what do I do? You know, they moved out of town. They've got no contact for these people. And I'm not saying that about Wendy or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Smart move to just get this stuff sorted, and you learn about it. You go, "Oh, I need to do this. I need to go to Harry Fox. I need to go to ASCAP, and here's my address. Here's my email." You know, we just did a deal with a top movie that's going to come out for, they're going to play Rainbow in the Dark at some point, you know, it's like, and it contacted me direct for my share of that song.
That's great. So,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's great.
Where it comes in handy.
That is really smart that you did that. Well, plus two, you never know. If someone else is managing your money, what if they suddenly have some problems? You know, and then like, you know, "Oh, I got to charge you fees or something." You know, you're right. You always want to control your own money.
Last in line, I do in the States, I do everything. I book the flights. The money comes into our account. I do all the accounting. I do hotels. And then I rent the vans or whatever we need, Sprinter vans, do everything. And then we have a tour manager, Mark Weber, this guy on the East Coast, works with Carmine too. He's amazing. And he advances the gig, which I hate to do. So he advances the stuff. I book everything. I budget it. And I do the VIPs. I do the merch. We have our own merch person now, Leslie. And we make money, you know?
Man, and not too many people are.
We don't come back and say, "Well, you guys lost, you know, $1,000. We make, every time we go out, we make money, you know?
Which is what you should do. You're working hard. You're getting paid. This is weird.
You know, traveling sucks, you know?
Horrible. But
these days, so, you know, I work with the agent and it's all in control. We don't, you know, let's buy first class tickets on the airplane. You know, we don't do that. You know, whoever wants to do something more can do it. You know?
Yeah, it's on them. That's great, man. Vinny, any low points or dark periods that you had to deal with during life, and how'd you get through them?
Not really, you know. At one point, I had to get shoulder surgery.
Wow, that's a big one for a drummer.
Because Heaven and Hell, the last tour, I had those aerial toms up here. I had a giant drum set, 21 pieces. Most of them were up in the air behind me, too. So I would be playing and hitting these drums behind me hard, like this, up here, came off the tour. I couldn't even lift my arm. So the tendon came off the bone. And this
holy shit.
That was freaky. I had to get surgery to reattach it, put an anchor, reattach it, and then go through therapy and all that stuff. And I used to go to shows and watch drummers. I go, man, I'm never going to be able to play like that again, you know. And I tell you, I did everything they told me to do, and it's as good as new.
That's great. Can you sleep on it?
I could sleep on it, but it's not good to sleep on your arm like this.
Oh, I know. It's horrible, but it's comfortable.
I like sleeping on the left side, and this one's hurting me now. So I don't need it. It's not good to sleep on your arms, on your shoulder.
You know, so many people do that. I've seen a product now. It's like a... it would seem to be really uncomfortable, but basically you put your arm in and it's like a pillow, but it doesn't put the pressure on your arm. It's not something really I would buy, because it's, who the hell wants this big thing in your bed with you, right? But so many people do that, and it's problematic for so many of us.
Probably the fetal position, you know.
I guess, yeah. But you
have to do that, you know. So, knock on wood. It's been great, you know. And then Carmine did the same thing. He was in Europe with Michael Schenker, and all of a sudden he heard a pop when he's playing. He couldn't move his arm, his left arm. So he called me. I said, dude, go get an MRI right away, because that's the only way to tell if it came off. And he had the same exact injury.
Wow, that's wild.
I told him what to do. I told him, you know, I helped him when he came back to LA. You know, you got to sleep in a chair, you know. You know, you're like in a big sling for a while, for, you know, a week or two, you sleep in the thing. It's terrible. And then his other one he had done too. And the other one still hurts him. You got to have a good doctor doing this stuff.
Yours is okay though.
Yeah,
that's good. Hey man, if that was the only low point,
I played for about 6 months, so that was a real low crap time.
That being said, if that is the lowest or the biggest stressor you had, that's a pretty good life, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, honestly, it really
no,
is.
No, I never, you know, knock on wood.
Yeah, really good, man. Good, happy for you. Is there any things you did along the way that were out
of divorce? That sucked.
That sucks. Yeah, but that's
really, I think that one of the worst things besides your health you can go through in life.
Well, because it messes with your health. It's so stressful.
Yeah, and it's just it's ridiculous.
It's stressful, man. It's terrible, yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that wasn't recently.
No, it was about 9 years ago. So
okay.
That's and done.
Good sorted. For you. Yeah. Any things that you've done that were out of your comfort zone at the time, but you did them and they turned out to be really good things that you did?
I don't know. I don't think so, because, you know, I'm always in my comfort zone. It's when people call me to do things, they know what they're getting.
Right.
And he plays like this. He played with Sabbath, Dio. This is more of a aggressive player. Blah, 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 blah. So, you know, it's, I've always been in the comfort zone. So cool. Not really. If that's what you meant musically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, musically is what I was talking about.
Then the computer thing was totally something else.
That is so wild.
Button shirts tucked in their pants all of a sudden. You know, I'm looking and I'm thinking, look at these guys. We all get here at 8 a.m. I've been in bands that nobody can even get there at noon. And then everybody's here. But I was into that. I was in, not to the dress thing, but I was into being there, because what happened was I did that school, the Microsoft school. It's pretty funny. And then taught the class. And then they go, man, you're really good, man. You know, Verizon's hiring people to do tech support. And so I go, really? You'd be so good, man. I go, nah. So they kept doing it and doing it, doing it. I said, because this was right after the Sabbath tour with Ozzy. So grunge was coming in. So it was a little bit of a low period.
Yeah.
But I was doing other stuff. And they kept on about this. And I said, all right, I'll go down and meet them. You know, they call me, this corporation. They go, can you come down Monday for an interview? I said, actually, I can't. Can I come down Wednesday? Nobody can do that. So I go down and meet them. And they knew I played drums for all these bands. And they were nervous.
That's okay, so just, funny.
These two, Laurie and, what was his name? Gil, heads of the department. And they were like, and they asked questions. I answered them. And then they asked the technical stuff. I'm, here, you do this, you do that. But, and then they go, wow. They go, all right, we'll be right back. Then they come back and go, well, you got a job if you want to. And I'm like, what? Really? A job? I never worked a job. But they paid really well money and medical stuff. I mean, it was just a good job. And I went, wow. But I like challenges. Like when the first offer of a drum clinic came up in my career, I never did it. I was nervous as shit. I went, okay, I'll do it. And I sat there for weeks putting book together what I'm going to do. And so I went, huh, I got time. This might be interesting. So I accepted it. So, and I became a leader there and did DSL, T1 support, Cisco routers, all this shit. And I learned a whole bunch of stuff. So I was actually, this is cool, you know? And then nobody wanted the shift that started at like 12 noon to 8. I said, perfect.
Yeah.
I don't give a crap. I'm always doing something on the weekend because they had families. I had a wife, no kids. So it didn't matter when I worked. So, you know, I didn't have to get up early. So it was a good gig I did for a while. And then they go, well, you got 2 week vacation. I said, that's it. 2 weeks. So then they come in, they go, what did you do on the weekend? I said, I went to Japan and played. I left on Thursday. I got there Friday, did an interview on Friday. We played the gig on Saturday. I came back on Sunday, ate breakfast in Japan, came back, ate breakfast in LA. This is 16 hours. And they go, you went to Japan? I said, yeah, I played. I took one, two days off. And then I went to the heads parties and the house. And yeah, they gave me the royal treatment. So
that's cool, man.
It was interesting, but it was like going from a color world into black and white. It was a corporation.
Yeah.
And I did that for a little over a year. And then I decided probably time now to go back where I came from. And that's what I did. And
wow.
I learned a whole bunch of stuff. It was really cool. They were very nice people. And I didn't have any problem with it, you know. And of course, I still played, you know. I'm still playing.
I really give you a lot of credit.
That was the only job.
To be that open-minded, not many musicians that had your experience level would have been that open-minded to do something like that. I think that's very cool.
Because it's something I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I obviously enjoy music, but I love these computer things. I love the problem. I love building them. And this was like a lot of people that were there, they turned over to being tech support, didn't really know how to fix the problems. And I called a leader and I'd go over. It was like, we used to be a phone company. So it turned over from a phone company to DSL tech support and T1s, you know, and the people that worked in the phone company didn't understand it that well. So I'd get on the phone. Give me the phone.
And you'd work them through it.
Oh, here you go. Now we boot it. I'd even fuck around with them. I go, okay, you see that file? I said, right click and go to delete. And they go, okay. Go, oh, wait a minute. Did you delete it? I'd fool around. They go, yeah. I go, oh, it's okay. I'm only kidding. So it was cool. But hanging out in a completely different world.
Yeah, I really give you a lot of credit to do that. That's very cool.
Yeah. Let me tell you, they had to fix computers. you become very popular with your friends.
Oh, I'm sure.
And family.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Best two or three best concerts you've seen. I can't imagine how many cool shows you've watched.
When I was really young, Vanilla Fudge played in New Jersey and Led Zeppelin opened.
Get out of here.
Vanilla Fudge took Led Zeppelin on tour. They even paid them for one gig. They chipped in to pay them because they weren't making any money, really. And so Carmine told me, yeah, check out the drummer. He's pretty good. So I went, and they were on fire, Zeppelin, when they first came over. And then the Vanilla Fudge came on, and they were on fire.
Yeah, they were great.
Cool, kick-ass stuff, you know.
Imagine that show, Zeppelin opening for Vanilla Fudge. That doesn't happen anymore like that.
And then they did that for a while. Then all of a sudden, Zeppelin's becoming bigger. You know, then they started switch headlining.
Mm.
Then it became them headlining, you know. Carmine said they used to get booed.
Zeppelin used to get booed? Wow. Yeah, because
back then, people went to the show to see the headliner. They didn't really care who playing on the opening slot and all that.
Interesting. Well, I guess you had so many choices back then. There were so many shows.
Yeah.
All the time. Now it's not the same. Wow.
Interesting.
You've played with some great guitarists. Who were some of the top ones or your favorite ones that you enjoyed playing with?
Well, Tony Iommi, Vivian, you know, those are my top.
Dude, those are pretty good top guitarists.
Vivian plugs his guitar right into the Marshall or he's using, what's the other one? Whatever. 4x4 cabinet head, plugs it in, and sounds fat and unbelievable. No pedal board.
Yeah.
Use a wah-wah pedal. Yeah. Tony used some effects, you know, but it's Tony. Tony
not a lot. He didn't use a lot of effects.
Sound that came out of both of these guys.
Yeah.
You know? And then I play with other things that I do, you know, unknown guitar players and they got this rack and pedal board, and it's so thin sounding. As soon as you see the pedal board and or racks, it's like it becomes screechy. You know, I tell them fit plugs right into the amp, dude, and it's a killer sound.
Yeah, absolutely
big fat sound. You know,
it's almost how do you play with anybody else after you play with those two guys? It's
well, that's the thing because it locks in so well with me and Tony, and it's so professional.
Mm.
And then you go play, you know, I do other things, and I don't understand after a couple of shows why you can't hear the ahead of you. I tell them, think ahead. Don't miss that chord that's coming up, you know. You hear it go away for a second, you know. And you go, well, it's the difference between up here and then the next level, you know, down. Mm-hmm. So I try to tell everybody, think ahead. That's what I do. I know the chorus is coming, man. I'll do a fill into that chorus, you know. And my drum teacher always said, read ahead when you're doing the instruction books. You're playing here, but look at what's coming up, you know.
Do you remember the first record you bought?
It was I Get Around by the Beach Boys, single. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Give me your, Vinny, top Desert Island Discs, top three, just for now, like knee-jerk reaction. Desert Island Discs, your top three favorite CDs or, you know, albums.
I used to like a band called Blue Cheer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Bus Eruption, I think it was called. That was killer. Led Zeppelin 1. And obviously Vanilla Fudge album, the first one. And then Hendrix. Are you experienced? That's four, but
man, it's really funny. I was just listening to Blue Cheer like 2 weeks ago. It, really great band. You know,
it's funny, like that album was so cool. It used to turn the album over and goes, it's recorded at a pier because they're too loud. And I'm like, yeah, this is kick ass. And the three of them are long hair, skinny, and years later, it's probably 15 years ago, somebody hooked me up with a guitar player.
Oh, wow.
And I drive to his house. I go, man, this is cool. You know, I'm expecting some, I'm the same look.
Yeah.
You know, there's some guy out front with some shorts on, flip-flops, a little bit more weight, say, a little bit less hair. He's a great guy. And he's watering the lawn. I go, that can't be him. Oh my God, that's him. But he was so crazy enough where maybe he didn't look the part so much anymore. But go in his house, he's got two Marshall stacks in the living room. Beautiful.
That's cool.
And we jam, and it's so fucking loud. He's still.
That's good, man.
Going, there you go. Awesome.
They became a. They were. When the second album came out, when they had the female singer, that's what really.
I didn't even hear that. I didn't even know they had a female singer.
Yeah, that's what really, you know, that's when they got real popular, I think. She had a great voice. That's funny, man. Tough questions. Most important things you've learned about yourself?
I learned when I put my mind to something, I do it. I could almost visualize the outcome of what I'm doing, and that's the goal, you know, and I just stick to it until it works.
Let me ask you this. You seem to be one of these.
I don't quit. And I was never thrown out of a band, too. I was never fired.
That's pretty amazing. You seem to be one of these guys that, like, quiet, but gets, you know, you're very, when I say quiet, like, you're not a boastful guy, but you seem to be one of these guys, like, you just, you've got a good positive energy, you know, like, you feel good about yourself, and that comes off to others, you know? Mm-hmm. You always been like that?
Pretty much so, yeah. You know, and that's why I very rarely didn't play outside my comfort zone, like with a real pop band or something.
You know? Yeah.
And I mean, a long time ago, I played with a disco band in the club when I was like 14, 15. That was just a weekend gig.
Sure.
But I was always more high energy with whatever I did. And a good example of that is with Last in Line when we write together. You know, everybody's got ideas. Then there's a lull in the room, you know, like the energy goes down. And I'll think of some crazy shit and put it out there. I know it's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
But it sparks everybody. Oh, well, maybe not that, but this, it brings in more ideas.
Yeah.
It's just a catalyst to spark more ideas. And I do it when I feel that the room went down. And I'll throw that out there. Maybe the thing will actually work, but, you know, it's better than not saying anything, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's an idea prompt. It almost doesn't even matter if it doesn't work, if it gets you to the final destination. Yeah. There. That's great, man. That's really good. Something about yourself that people might be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
I'm actually reading the Bible now. I'm not a totally religious person. I'm not a, you know, but I thought, you know, I grew up Catholic, made the confirmation, all that stuff. I don't remember any of that stuff. And then I thought, what's in the Bible? I don't even know. I just did concentrated on the music and what I was doing. So I thought, let me start reading this. You know, my sister bought a big Bible. It was too big. And then my girlfriend bought a little Bible, and I just left it on the table, get up, have some coffee. I started reading it. I'm going, holy shit, man, this is like an adventure book. Killing each other, there's incest, there's sex, there's it. I'm like, holy crap, this is what happens. It's the Old Testament.
Yeah.
So I just wanted it for the knowledge of, reading the Bible. I'm not reading the whole thing, but certain parts I'll skip. But it's like, sit up in the morning, and it's interesting, you know, like how these people lived. Did you know that Jesus Christ is not his last name?
I know nothing. I've never read the Bible. I've never been exposed
to that out. Even my brother Frank, he lives down the street, and we're going, wow, I didn't even think of that. Holy shit. That's not his last name. Christ means like the one, you know, the Son of God or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, then I think about it. Well, nobody had last names back then.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
I read some of these names. I can't even pronounce them. I go, no, yeah, now that you say that, there was no last names. It was like Vinny from Jerusalem. Roman from whatever.
Right. Bensonhurst.
But, you know, I'm not a religious fanatic. Any of that stuff, don't push it on anybody.
And sure.
I just thought this was interesting to read one of the most famous, the famous book in the world. So it's interesting.
It's really interesting is I've talked to so many people, baby boomers, you know, and I don't know if it's just like a vibe maybe I'm somehow putting out or because I'm talking to so many guys lately that are all reading stuff like that or just not really soul searching, but looking into these types of things to figure stuff out and learn and yeah. see how they could put some of that into their use for their own life for the, for good. You know, it's really, really, I mean, Neil,
well, you know, when you read it, it takes you away to that, like that time, what's going on, you know, you think about it, everybody's concerned with the violence that's going on these days. There was so much mass violence in the, that book. You go, man, everybody's killing each other back then.
Yeah.
Know? So now they keep doing it. So,
yeah. It's just crazy, man. It's a very crazy world. Who's had the biggest influence on you, both musically and then also personally?
Well, musically, Carmine, obviously, and John Bonham, Buddy Rich, Billy Cobham, Mitch Mitchell, those guys. And the reason why I choose those guys is because those, I always tell this to other drummers, those guys didn't play it safe in the songs. They didn't play the song. They played in the song, and they took chances with different fills and like over the vocal line, things like that, or put the drums were part of the song. They didn't play it, you know, very safe.
Yeah.
And that's how I grew up, and that's why I played the way I play too. I listen to those guys. And then personally, you know, Calm, I'm around him. And I wasn't around John Bonham. I never met him.
Sure.
So, and my father was a good example of, you know, just a working guy, took care of the family. You know, he had responsibility and all that stuff. So,
what did your dad do? What kind of work did he do?
He actually, on the East Coast, they have oil burners. In the winter, they tanks. It's weird, right? You got to get your tank full.
Yeah.
All truck. And my Uncle George used to be one of those guys, drove the truck, delivered the oil into the house.
Sure.
Fixed the oil burners.
Yep. So,
and he was fixing everything. He would do everything.
That's where you got. Yeah.
So I took off. I took after him. And I want to, you know, learn about everything in the house, fix it. I don't call anybody to fix anything. I fix it myself.
That's awesome.
Car, not so much because they don't, and the car's fairly new and it doesn't, I don't know.
They're not really fixable anymore. You need to put them on a computer.
Huh? Yeah, you put them on a computer. Yeah. But years ago, my first car was a 67 Mustang with an inline six engine.
A badass car.
You could have a picnic in there. There's so much room. You know? I bought it for $400 in LA and I drove it down the street, me and my friend Ricky, and it conked out. And all we could do back then was open the hood and go, the engine's there. Then I said, I'm going to learn about this because I bring it in. It was $50. Well, I'll learn about this. So I started reading books. Then I went to this class they had at Hollywood High School, like a six-week course in automotive repair. And then I learned and then I started fixing it myself. I started changing the head gaskets and freeze plugs and radiators and this and that and water pumps. And I never brought it to the mechanic again. So that's me.
That's dude. I have so much respect for you, man. That's so cool that you're like in your curiosity and intelligence led you to do things. That's like really, really cool.
My brother, Frank, as I said, lives like around the corner. Nice. Same house as mine. Really, really nice. Yard and everything. And I go over there, I fix his stuff for him.
That's
fence
nice. Broken.
I figure out what we need to do to fix this fence. It's this PVC stuff and come up with ways to fix things that weren't the original part, you know? So
that's cool.
I like doing it.
Well, it's cool that your brother's out there too. I mean, you guys are grew up in Brooklyn and here out together in LA, which is nice, man, or in California, which is really cool. Two more questions, man. Anything that you wish you did differently or anything you regret not doing?
Probably hanging out with Ronnie at the end a little bit more, you know, and then before he passed. Only because now I know he passed, you know, but obviously it doesn't happen. Like, you know, he's getting, because it happened quick. So, no, I don't know what I would do differently, you know. I got to play with, you know, a lot of the greatest bands that were part of rock, greatest musicians. So, and, you know, I'm still able to play that music. Like I said, I just came back from South America. I have a band down there and we do Sabbath. And mostly Sabbath that I played on, a couple old songs and then a little bit of Dio. And the people go crazy. It's just South American fans are just so passionate about the music and passionate about Black Sabbath and Dio. They love Ronnie. They love Sabbath. And I go down there and I'm able to play by myself. With a band.
That's really amazing.
Same thing in Europe now. I've done two tours there, and this is like I'm becoming more of a solo artist, which is amazing.
Great.
But I'm not promoting an album. I'm doing all this classic stuff, you know. And I'm really proud of that. It's like the first time ever that I'm the boss in the event, you know.
Yeah, but so. You should be, man, to be honest with you. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass or anything, but you're like intellectually and experience-wise more than qualified. Why not? You know?
So much experience with different situations and bands and gigs and this and the whole thing, but I'm luckily enough to have played in Sabbath and Dio, two bands that started all this.
Of course, yeah.
Started all this. Then you got Dio, one of the most amazing singers in rock that will ever live. And I got to play with this and make classic albums. You know, we did Mob Rules is totally classic. Live Evil seems to be pretty classic. Then Holy Diver and Last in Line.
Great records.
Three records that are like the cornerstone of the House of Rock, you know. And I got to play and be involved in that music. So I'm very lucky to be able to go out and do this on my own. I love it. It's so cool. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun playing this old stuff too. You know, Heaven and Hell and Children of the Sea, Mob Rules.
Mob Rules is just such.
Off the Edge of the World, Computer God, Holy Diver. I mean, every song's known.
Yeah.
And it's fun to twist, put them in a set list that you know you're going to get a reaction and break them up and change them a little bit, get the audience participation. So it's fantastic. I'm having the time of my life.
I'm happy. You deserve it, man. You're a hardworking guy. And you're not afraid to do shit either, which is the toughest thing for a lot of people. You can get all the knowledge in the world, but you got to get up off your ass and make the phone call. And,
You're sitting on the computer all day and you go, well, I'm doing this and here's my video and all that shit, you know. Got to get out with people. And then in South America, I love going down there so much. That so fans are so nice that I mean, I go out after the show and there's 150, 200 people in line.
What countries are you playing in that you like the most?
Brazil, that's where I played. And I'll go out and sign everyone and take a picture and they freak out. They go, so thank you for coming. I mean, guys coming up kissing my cheek, which I don't like. kissing my hand. I'm like, you know, but I know what it's in
their heart. It's good intentions. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I touch their heart, you know, and it's like, so I'll go out because usually after a show, I'm like, oh man, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of energy. But here I'll go out to everybody.
That's so cool.
That's man. What I just came back on Monday. So
have you met any of the bands there, like the more popular bands in Brazil?
What's that?
Have you met any?
Sepultura, you know?
Yeah, I had Andreas on the show. He's a great guy, man.
He came on when I played last year in San Paulo.
Yeah.
He came on. We did a couple of songs together.
He's a great guy, man.
We're trying to put it together with him, too, to do some more shows together. And they freaked out. He was great. He's a great guy. We had so much fun.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, royalty there down there in Brazil. I mean, he's real. And he's a very humble guy. He lives a quiet life. Was very extremely family oriented. He was a real sweet guy to talk with. Yeah. Real class guy.
They appreciate when you come down there.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there with first time Sabbath. Sabbath was never down there ever with Ozzy.
Really?
And until 92, when we had the Humanizer album, we went down there. And it was like the Beatles. And airport that free about 100 people they followed us in the cars and kill a four nights in the three nights and then in the stadium and so I've been there with them then with Dio two times I think then I went down with a band called Big Noise again so I've been down there a lot so that you keep going down there you get more popular they appreciate it thank you for coming because it's far sometimes there's not a lot of money to make because you know their economy is not as big as the US or Europe so they really appreciate you going down there
that's awesome man I'm gonna ask you one more question biggest change in your personality Vinny over the last 10 years and how much of that has been intentional and how much is a natural part of aging
well I try to You know, I grew up in Brooklyn, so I'm very aggressive, pissed off.
Really?
Early on, you know, is that Brooklyn thing. And now I try to be a little bit more calm about it. But then, you know, not just whoever's in the car with me, you know, somebody doesn't. Look at that fucking asshole. Fucking. Ronnie used to do it, too. We used to drive to the studio, and he drove like, you know, we drove in Europe. He would drive in England, and, you know, fucking asshole, fuck you, you know, give him the finger and
That's
shit.
That's so funny. He said, from Cortland? Is that, I read different. Portland, he was from
New York.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's Italian.
Yeah.
That's why we got along so good. He would do that all the time, you know.
And, That's funny.
Somebody push him the wrong way. He's little, but he'll fucking go after you.
Really?
You know? So I try to keep him more calm now.
That's good. It's better for you. Less stress for yourself. That's what I find anyway. Yeah. You got to be a lot more zen about things. Yeah. Man, let me tell people what you got going on. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I really enjoyed talking. It was very interesting learning all about the cool, totally different stuff I would not have expected.
It's and crazy. A long career.
Anybody who has Bible questions, you call 1-800-VINNY.
I didn't finish it yet. I didn't read it this morning. I was watching Leave It to Beaver. That's my favorite show.
Were you really?
I grew doing up everything. On that show, right?
You're doing.
Then work. I started doing these events. This guy Howie, he's my agent, and he called up. He goes, "You want to do this horror event in New Jersey?" And I'm like, really? So I went and did it, and it's all the actors from the horror movies, the old ones or TV shows. And fucking Leave It to Beaver's there. Jerry Nethers and Tony Down. I go, dude, I got to meet them. Like, they took me over. I met them, took pictures with them. I was like, killer. Then I met him again at another convention and met Jerry Mathers Beaver's wife, Teresa. And she was so sweet. And we talked and I texted back and forth. I wanted to get his book. And it's like, this was so cool meeting these people, you know. And I met Little Ricky from the Lucy Show.
Oh my God, that's wild.
He comes over and goes, "I'm a fan." I went, "You're a fan?" I said, "I watched that as a kid and see you play the drums. That was inspirational for me." It's like, look at that drum set. This little kid's playing. And I'm meeting all these people. I'm going, holy shit, this is so cool. I love doing those. Meet people from, last one I did was Back to the Future. And Freddy Krueger. Had Freddy going like this with his things on, his blades. Elvira, you know.
That's wild.
Oh, man. And one more thing I do is these rock fantasy camps, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Talk about that.
I've been doing those for like 10, 15 years. And those are fantastic. And they're different headliners come in. The next one's with Cheap Trick, and they're doing the Sgt. Pepper album. So they wanted me to be involved, you know, because I played with John Lennon. So this one's where the fuck is it? It must be in L.A. So I'm doing that in November, and what happens there is I become a counselor, and I have a band, and I have to get them in shape to play with Cheap Trick. And then they do two gigs, one at the Whiskey, one at the Rock and Bowl, I think it is. And it's really cool. Me, musician, teach them how to do this correctly as a band, to work as a band in 4 days.
Are you gentle with them, or are you like Brooklyn with them?
What's that?
Are you gentle with them, or are you like Brooklyn with them?
I let them go, you know, until it goes, okay, that's enough. Like the main thing is you go, let's listen to the song.
Right.
Play the song, everybody starts playing along. You can't read a fucking song. You know what I mean? It's just rock and roll 101. Again, I'll let that go on, and I'll go, okay, stop. Listen to the song. You got to listen to the song. You can't play over the song because you're playing it wrong, and you can't hear what was correct. So stuff like that, you know. Drummers, I tell them, I get on the set, because they don't end things or signal to the band. I go, watch. Tell the band, hit whatever chord together when I hit the cymbal. And I'll do it low. I'll go, boom, like this. And they start missing it because they can't see. I go, now do it again. Boom, 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 boom. I said, perfect, right? You can't, you got to control the band. You're the drummer. Give them signals, you know, just easy stuff. Yeah. Sometimes they forget and I see them going like this again. They go, yeah. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun. They have a great experience and I've been doing them. David Fischoff originated this. We've done Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, Farner, Def Leppard. We didn't do Queensryche, but just everybody. And it's fun. The Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains. And they're all like friends now. I go, hey, dude, how you doing? So it's good. It's a great time. So I do that too. And these are nice things to do that are different than just playing in a band.
That is nice, man. And that's Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. Somebody wants to check that out.
Yeah. Check it out online. The new one's coming up, and they have a whole bunch of them coming up next year. So,
all right. Let me tell people what you got going on. So Last in Line, go to lastinlineofficial.com. Second album just got released. That's the band with you and Vivian Campbell. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that's the band that we started out as a fun thing, you know, with Jimmy Bain before he passed. And then Andy Freeman on vocals, an amazing, amazing singer. And he doesn't try to be Ronnie, but he has the passion and sings from his heart, you know, and from his soul, I should say. So that turned into writing our own material, doing first album. And then we lost Jimmy. He passed right before that album was released. And we got our good friend Phil Soussan to play with Ozzy and Billy Idol. We knew him for years, Viv and I. And Andy's worked with him many times. And he came in, he fit right in. And we did the writing for the second album that just came out in February. And both albums are doing really well. And we're doing some dates coming up in the U.S. We do next month. We do the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas. Actually, it's my birthday that day too, September 13th.
35.
Friday the 13th. That's why I play with Black Sabbath.
35th.
Yeah. So, then we go out with UFO on the East Coast and do about 6 or 7 shows with them, which is going to be ridiculously packed.
That's great.
Stupid. And then we go over to England and do a little tour there for about 9 or 10 shows. And then next year we'll be gigging more and start writing for the next album.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool.
We have a great time. We're, all of us liked hanging out together and off stage and on stage. And we have a lot of fun on stage. I mean, I get to play crazy shit and watch Viv smile because I turned it down. He looks over and, you know,
that's
he tries
awesome.
To lose what he's doing because I'm not holding the beat sometimes. Yeah. So, and then Phil just stays there and Andy does this thing. So we it's just like an amazing amazing band.
Love That's awesome, playing. Man. Yeah. Any dates in Florida planned?
No, we haven't played Florida yet. That's got to, we got
to. It's tough to get down here because it's so far apart, everything. I know that.
Yeah, yeah. So I got that, and then Drum Wars with my brother Carmine. That's a show with both of us playing history of our music. We have a band, good band, and then we do a little bit of drum stuff in between. There's a lot of fun stuff in there. There's a lot of comedy, believe it or not. And then it's a high energy show. It's a high energy rock show. Really cool. It's not a drum clinic. It's not that. It's a, you know, we do 12 rock songs, some drum things. It's really cool. And then do that. And then I do the thing that I said with the band in South America. And we play most of the stuff from Sabbath that I play on, a couple of oldies, sprinkle of Dio. And then I do the same thing in Europe with another band. It's really good. And we're really tight. And the last one we did was the Mob Rules Live, we called it. And it was most of the songs from Mob Rules, which people freaking out, you know, they loved it. Same thing, sprinkle of Dio, some old stuff. And next year I'll be doing both those areas again.
That's great.
Yeah, because it's been so successful. So I love doing that, and I'm really, really enjoying being able to go out on my own and do this stuff, you know, by myself.
Do you post any of this stuff on social media, like where you're going to be? Where would people go to?
Yeah, it's on Facebook, and my site is vinnyappice.com, you know.
Great.
The dates are up there.
And Vinny spells this. You hear that. Vinny's last name is Appice, A-P-P-I-C-E. And also, you want to talk about, you got a pretty good relationship with Sawtooth?
Yeah, it's Sawtooth drums I'm using now. And these are a company that the company they're under is GoDPSMusic.com. And they have a big online business with everything, guitars, amps, everything, drums, cymbals. And then he started, my good friend Joe Fuco, he's the owner, partner in the company, and he's a good buddy. He's a drummer, and he wanted his own drum design line of drums. So these drums are made of poplar wood. They're real loud. They're real, a lot of sustain, which I love. And they're cheap. They're not great, you know, expensive drums, but they're great sounding drums. And the only thing I do is beef up the snare drum. So we put a little heavier stuff on it. And that's for me because I like to beat the shit out of it. You know? And just great sounding drums. So they're called Sawtooth. And he does sticks. I got sticks that are signed. It's called Chromacast is the name of the company that does the sticks. That's his company too. And hardware. And it's really good stuff. All strong pro stuff. And the sticks, I've signed thousands of pairs of sticks over the last couple of years, and it's sold on Walmart.com.
Oh, cool. The signed sticks?
I signed every one of them.
And they're on, yeah. And people can buy them on, okay. That's really cool.
You can
cool.
find them on Walmart.com or go to Chromacast.com and see all the stuff. They got so much stuff, great prices, and really great people. And there's some instructional videos up there for free. I did a bunch of them in my studio here, you know, different things.
Sure.
And I got them all.
And you got merch on your website as well?
I got some things on my site. Not a whole lot, but there's pictures, a couple of shirts, and I don't know what else is up there. And then last in line, we have a whole bunch of merch up there. And
And you can have a Vinny Appice celebrity oil change. For $500.
Vinny Appice Bibles. Vinny Appice tool sets.
That's right. Vinny Appice Microsoft. We're going to have a new MS Microsoft certification of Vinny Appice.
Yeah. I come in with my own computer. You know.
There you go. Listen, thank you very much for everything. If you put out another Last in Line record, the door's open. Come back on the show. We'll promote it, man. We'll do a short 25. Yeah, man. I'll be happy to do that. All right. So hang on 1 second.
Thanks for being on, man. And thanks for everybody watching. And I hope you enjoyed some of these stories. There's a lot of stories.
Oh,
Carmine,
great.
Carmine and I, we just did two gigs, but the next day after on those gigs, we did what's called Me and Him Rock History.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, everybody's in the room, and then we they ask us a bunch of questions, kind of like this, and we tell these stories that backstage and all the stuff you don't hear and what goes on, and then they get to ask questions, and then we played a little bit, and it went over great. So we're trying to book more of those too.
Fireside Chat, Carmine and Vinny. Fireside Chat, man.
People like you see, you hear them listening to like a John Lennon story. You go,
oh, that was gold, man.
You know, he came in the room and sat down on the step and watched you guys play. And they're imagining this, their mouths open, like, holy shit.
And you're 16.
Ozzy, Rod Stewart, and back in the old days when there were no monitors and cool stuff. So hopefully we can do more of that because it's a lot easier to put together than with a band, you know.
And was it, is this on your social media stuff as well?
No, we have to put that up, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Like the sweet thing up. So
awesome. And your last one was in Seattle. Any idea where the next one's going to be?
We were going to do Alaska, but I think I just got a message that we'll probably move that to the new year, which I don't know if I want to go there in January.
God, no.
So, I don't know. We'll have to keep it on the website.
Awesome.
CarmineAppice.com or Apice, but it's spelled the same, .com.
There you go. Thank you, man. Let me wrap this up, and thanks very much for everything. We'll talk in a second. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Please check out everything that Vinny is doing, Vinny Appice. It's on his vinnyappice.com, APPICE, lastinlineofficial.com. And he's just go to his social media channels as well. He's got a lot of stuff going on, and check him out. And he's, check out the Drum Wars thing. That sounds really cool if you're in the area. Yeah. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com, sign up to get on our newsletter site so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar or your drums, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.